8 o'clock Sunday morning. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, flagship station of the 2018 Western Conference champion Vegas Golden Knights. We are streaming on the LV Sports Network if you are listening for the first time. This is Out of Line. We're right here every Sunday morning at 8, coming to you live from the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and you can also watch the show on Facebook Live. Here in studio with me, as always, is Chris Magnum Chapman, Lotus Broadcasting producer, on-air personality, and Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent. You can follow us on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM, and like the show on Facebook. That's Out of Line, O-U-T-T. A-L-I-N-E. Callers are welcome and encouraged. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is sponsored by the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com. And on tap, well, the Vegas Golden Knights blow two leads and the game in Montreal yesterday. Fact, this calls out UNLV basketball today, if you're paying attention yesterday and know why. And, you know, the hell with the odds. UNLV football is actually blazing. I never thought I'd say that this year. Alan Snell of the LV Sports Biz Minute will be joining, and his book comes out next Friday. Some book signings. Will be giving away an autographed copy here in the near future, so definitely check that out. It's a really cool book, Long Road Back to Vegas, about a bicycle accident. Just really cool. Definitely stick around and check out. We'll talk to Ann a little bit later on. Also, Emily Van Buskirk, the college football writer at Yardbarker, will be joining the show. Emily, I'll tell you what, Emily should have some great opinions on what's going on. I just want to know, even with Alabama potentially without a quarterback for maybe a little bit or a banged-up quarterback, can anybody beat this team? Two shutouts in a row for the first time since 1980 might be the best team Nick Saban has had there. And that's one hell of a statement. We'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. And there's a huge trade in the NBA, and most of you know about it already. It creates another big three-headed monster, this one in the Eastern Conference. I think they're going to be a formidable foe for anybody they play. We'll talk about that as well. And also, it's week 10 in the NFL. Magnum and Caleb back on the winning trail. Those two guys are extremely hot. I'm hanging just above 500, but I did this last year, man. Stick around for our picks, though. We'll hook you up with that. That's What's on Tap, and that's thanks to our new title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Again, check out cardinalfinancial.com.
Fleury cuts it off and swings it behind the net. Near side, Smith lost it to Gallagher. Out in front, Tatar! Score!
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, Nightcap. Mags, what do you think, man? I mean, you knew that Montreal would probably play him decently tough, but Anthony Emme, man, I mean, one day he can play decent goal, another day the guy looks like Swiss cheese. I really thought this was a way for the Golden Knights to win two straight on the road for the first time this year, which would have been nice to see, but it didn't happen. And, of course, Tomas Tatar trying to make the decision makers here in Vegas look bad. Seven goals on the season, he'd be leading the Vegas Golden Knights with that total.
Well, he wouldn't. Marchessault has eight.
Oh, that's right. Marchessault has eight.
Yeah, they're definitely. Hey, to be fair, the two guys George McPhee traded for at the trade deadline, both playing well. Unfortunately for the Golden Knights, one of them is playing well in Montreal. The guy he traded in return for Tomas Tatar, I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, Pacioretty is a guy who scored a lot of goals in his career. To be fair, he has missed some time, and he's had a couple of guys in and out of his line. But the reality is, Max Pacioretty has not performed. And there's a couple of other guys that have not performed either. It's not just Max Pacioretty. You know, the thing is, They score. They have had trouble scoring goals all season. They score 5 goals against Ottawa. They score 4 goals last night. Problem is, they gave up 8 goals. So you would think, all right, they finally got the problem squared away. They scored goals, but now they're giving up goals. And I think to rub salt in the wounds, they were up 3-0 against Ottawa on Thursday night. They allowed 3 straight goals to Ottawa before they got goals from Will Carrier and Pierre-Edward Belmar. Last night, they take a 2-0 lead. You're thinking, all right, it's time for the floodgates to open on Antti Niemi. Montreal comes back and scores a couple of goals in a row. So there's a lot of problems on this team. I don't think it's going to be addressed when Nate Schmidt comes back, because I think the problem is there's just no cohesiveness right now. They're not getting anything from a lot of guys. Look, first line has played well. I don't think they've played great because their plus-minus isn't great.
They played well last night.
They did play well last night. They got goals from Marchessault, got goals from Carlson. Yep. But Riley Smith has not performed.
Had a chance, too, last night.
He's had a couple
of real good chance to tie the game last
night. And that's not the first time this season.
No.
He's had a couple of opportunities this season, and he hasn't buried the puck. Alex Tuck is playing well.
Yep.
He was injured. Cody Eakin's playing well. The fourth line is playing well. Other than that, I mean, it's hard. I can't look at a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury and say, oh, well, he let up 4 goals, it's his fault. Or he let up 5 goals, it's his fault. There's a lot of things that happen in front of him that lead to those goals. I mean, some he should save, some he's got no chance. I mean, there's certain things that you just can't do as a goalie. This team really needs some soul searching, because their backs right now are against the wall. And I see some people saying, well, how could they be against the wall? It's only November. The problem is you have to look at history. And I know last year this team made history. At some point, the magic runs out. At some point, the bottle of wine is empty. There's only so much luck and so many fortunate bounces you can get before reality takes over. And the reality is, you could say, well, they're just not doing this or that. The reality is, they're not winning games.
They're losing. That's the bottom line. They're losing.
And that's the thing. It's like, look, they played well against Carolina last week, last Saturday night. Then they go on the road, and they played well against Toronto, but somehow they lost that game.
Yep.
They played.
They blew yesterday's game. They flat out blew yesterday's game.
They played okay against Ottawa. It's just that Ottawa just isn't very good, so they were able to win that game thanks to the fourth line. Last night, they should have slammed the door on Montreal. They had a 4-3 lead. They gave up 2 straight goals. Once Carlson scored that goal in the third period, you're like, all right, they got this. They're fine.
100%.
And breakdowns, they're not playing a full 60 minutes. The second period was one of the worst periods they've played all season.
Mm-hmm.
In a season of bad periods, I'm not sure what the fix is. You know, I don't know. You know, it's funny. We talked about it on some other shows about maybe changing up the lines. But the problem is, you're not getting any production from your third line. Nosek, Hika, and Carpenter, between the three of them, I think they've got 1 goal. The Pacioretty line with Tuck and Eakin. Eakin and Tuck only are playing together because of the injury to Eric Halla.
Yep.
And Eric Halla was
moving Eakin up to that second line really worked out well for them.
But the problem is there's no balance now on that third line because you lost the only guy on that line who was performing.
Yep, and Cody Eakin.
And now it's almost to the point where do you not even play that line? I mean, does that become your fourth line?
It's a good question. You know, Chris, talking about the fourth line, last night was one of the rare times this year that the fourth line hasn't made any noise as far as point production goes. But this fourth line, the one thing that has been really exciting and a pleasure to watch this year is that fourth line. You know, Belmar centering it is phenomenal. And Carrier and Reeves, it's a throwback line. You know, it reminds me almost of the line of years ago. They put a line on the ice for the Detroit Red Wings with Joey Koser and Bob Probert together.
No way.
And, I mean, you know, other guys, you'd see them as they had to come on the ice and play that line. It's like you're almost pussyfooting around because you don't want to get killed. And Ryan Reeves and William Carrier can do some damage. You definitely don't want to be the guy in the corner with those two guys, you know?
Yeah, I think Reeves has, what, 5 goals this year?
5 goals, man.
His career high is 7. You know,
I'm loving it. He's such a good guy.
Will Carrier has already surpassed his point total for last season.
Last season, yeah, I know.
In 15 games. 16 games.
And Belmar plays with reckless abandon. I love that guy.
Pierre-Edward Belmar is one of the most underrated players in the NHL because he does. And you know what? I'll give credit to my cousin, who's a big Philadelphia Flyers fan. And when they drafted Belmar from the Flyers, I immediately asked him what his thoughts were. And the first thing he said to me was, "You will love this guy." Everybody in Philly loved him because of the way he played. He was cerebral, yet he was willing to risk his body on every single play. All he wants to do is win. He plays the game the right way. He doesn't commit stupid penalties. He is the epitome of a role player, and he's a guy that the fans will love. And he told me, he said, first thing, you will love this guy. And I think we're a year and a half in of knowing Pierre-Edward Belmar, and I can't think of anything about his game that I don't like. Like, there's literally nothing about that guy's game that I don't like. He understands his job. He goes out and does it. He's always good with the media. He gives us answers. He's never afraid to tell the truth. If the team stinks, he's going to tell you, we stunk tonight.
Yep.
And it's refreshing because not a lot of guys will tell you that. Some guys will have excuses. And I'm not saying on this team because I'm yet to come across a guy who comes up with excuses. In fact, I've thrown excuses to some guys, and they've told me, well, no, those are just excuses. We need to be better. So I think
hockey players in general are among the most honest of all the athletes. I really believe that.
You see it more so in the NFL and I think the NBA where guys will
pussyfoot around the question.
Yeah, they'll
politically correct answers, you know, just the crap, the garbage, generic crap. NHL, they don't like to lose. They truly don't like to lose. And you see it every game. Remember last year, Mags, when I went up to James Neal after their first loss when they lost the Red Wings, and he got mad at me when I said, you're not going to win 82 games. I mean, come on, man. And he was seriously pissed off, and they had just won 3 games in a row to start the season, an expansion team, and they weren't happy. But you're 100% right. They get angry. But you know what I like about Belmar? The one thing you can, you know, coin with Belmar, the guy's always got a mark. He's got a black eye. He's got a scratch on his face, stitches. Something with Belmar, because that is the way he plays. He epitomizes what you would expect a hockey player to be.
Well, and his story of where he came from and how he was raised, I think, is very interesting. Because for a lot of people, they may not know. But he is from Paris.
Yeah.
He grew up in one of the suburbs in a single family home or single parent home, I should say. And I believe it was in Saint-Denis, which is a very rough area of Paris. It's a tough neighborhood where he grew up. And his sister was an Olympian.
I did not know that.
I think she was a high jumper, and I think his family lineage goes back to one of the Caribbean islands, if I'm not mistaken, and she represented one of those islands in the Olympics. So, obviously a very athletic family and a tough upbringing for him. And I think you can see that on the ice because he literally works for everything. He takes no shifts off. Never do you see that guy taking a shift off. He'll get bloodied. I mean, I remember a game last year. He took a stick to the face, and his eye literally opened. I thought he lost his eye. And you could see the blood dripping from his face.
Never missed a game.
Onto the ice. He went back. He was literally back out there. The guy went to the locker room and was literally back out there in one shift.
Yeah, missed a shift, I think, right?
Yeah, one shift. Yeah. And it's like, he is the guy that I think the fans should really love because of the way he works, his work ethic, but I think he really makes that fourth line go, and there's a lot of chemistry with those two guys because Carrier and Reeves play a very similar game, mm-hmm. except Carrier has a lot of speed. He was a scorer in the NHL. We're starting to see, as his confidence grows, he scored two goals now in the last three games.
Crazy.
You know, so that line continues to produce. I don't think you touch that line.
Oh, I don't think they will, Chris.
I almost am at the point where, do you maybe move Tuck up to that first line and move Riley Smith down?
That's, you know, I think that's something that that is, we're going to see the Turk look at.
Because I know a lot of people will say, well, you can't break up Marcia, so Smith and Carlson. But the reality is,
you can.
You got to shake things up, even if it's for only a game or two.
I don't think Alex Tuck is a bad decision to put on that line.
I think Tuck has kind of earned at least the look to play with those two guys. Yeah. Because people
say, you know what? He brings a little bit more of a physical presence to that first line, too. I mean, Riley Smith is a finesse hockey player.
Yeah.
A good stick handler, a great passer, and used to, up until recently, pretty efficient at putting the biscuit in the basket, where Marchessault is a physical player, but he's a little guy.
And you know what's funny? Marchessault gets a lot of praise from Ryan Reeves because of the fact that Marchessault plays
so physical,
so physical
small.
For such a small guy. Like I'm 5'8", and I kid you not, Marchessault, we stand next to each other, we're literally like the same height. Man. Like he may have like an inch or so on me, but it's not like where I talk to Reeves and he's staring down at me. I just think you're at the point where something is not right. You have to shake things up, and I think maybe the move is you move Alex Tuck up to that first line and give him an opportunity to play with Carlson and Marchessault. And then maybe that kind of, you know, and it's funny because I had heard that in odd years, Riley Smith has really good seasons. It's in the even years, or maybe I've got that backwards. It's in the even years where maybe he has the good seasons, and it's in the odd seasons where he has, like, he alternates good and bad seasons. But I like Riley Smith. I think he's a really good player, and he's a nice, really nice guy. He's a funny guy, but the goal is to win hockey games. And maybe Riley Smith playing with Max Pacioretty and Cody Eakin would be better than Alex Tuck playing with those guys. And maybe moving Tuck up will help a lot.
You know, very good point. And Riley Smith, there is no question, Riley Smith is not the same guy we saw last year in terms of production and maybe even confidence. I don't know, because, again, shorthanded at the end of the game, if you saw the game last night, Riley Smith really had a great doorstep opportunity, and I think last year he buries that puck, and this year it doesn't go in.
Well, he's had two or three others where he's had prime scoring opportunities.
Standing and right there with an open net, basically.
I think it was the Tampa game where he had pretty much an open net, and he missed. And I don't know what's going on. I mean, because Marchessault is producing. I mean, Marchessault is going to score 40 goals.
And, you know, Carlson doesn't have the goal total last year, but he's still getting a lot of assists.
He's
got the points.
And I think people want him to score more goals, but the reality is some of the goals that he scored are now going to Jonathan Marchessault.
They are, and you also have to think, Chris, that part of the reason is other teams are keying in on William Carlson. You can see it now. They've got a sniper, a spy on him all the time, and that's what they do with the upper echelon players. And as good as Carlson performed last year, come on, he's not Alex Ovechkin. He's not Sidney Crosby, but he had that kind of production last year, so he is warranting more defensive attention, and that is going to limit his point total, which really equates to his goal totals.
And, you know, the thing is, I think early on, teams were really like, all right, we need to show these guys who's boss, you know, and they come in the league. And I don't think that's the case anymore. You know, I think now for a lot of teams, it's just another game. You know, I don't think there's anything special that these teams are doing to the Golden Knights. It's not like they're like, well, this is a huge game for us because it's Golden Knights. No, I think at this point in the season, it's a game.
And the breaks aren't going their way. And last year, it seemed so many times breaks went their way. It was a magical season. And it's not happening as much this year. Listen, they do go, they're on the road today again. They finish up this four-game road trip against the Boston Bruins. It's going to be later this afternoon at 4 o'clock. They finally come back to T-Mobile Arena. They'll be in town for two games starting Wednesday night against the Ducks. And I'll be out at Friday night's game. They're playing the St. Louis Blues come to town. And then back on the road, they head back to Canada. They're going to play the Edmonton Oilers, the Flames. But the couple games...
They'll get Nate Schmidt back for that
for the road trip
for the Edmonton game.
Yes, which is gigantic. I mean, that's gonna, I really think, change things around.
Nate is back. He's practicing with the team. He's talking to the media.
Oh, I'm sure he's staying in great shape.
It's, you know, the thing is, though, I think people, I don't want people's expectations to get too high. Where, all right, Nate's back. The problem solved.
Yeah, right.
it's gonna take some time for him to get back up to game speed, because look, you could say, well, you know, he was practicing. He's in good shape. He was over in Vienna playing with those, practicing. He couldn't play. He was practicing with those guys. But the thing is, you can't match game speed. That's what we always hear: practice speed and game speed. And then you're down a notch, because I'm not sure where the Austrian Hockey League ranks in terms of European leagues, but I would imagine it's well below Germany, well below Sweden, well below Russia. So
all it's doing is giving you your lungs and getting you in game shape.
That's it.
That's about it.
You know, one of the things he said was, he said, look, those practices were pretty intense. So that's good that those practices were.
But again, Chris, to your point, Nate Schmidt is a defensive. Granted, an offensive-minded defenseman, but he's still a defenseman.
Well, he became a bit of a lockdown defender last year, towards the end of the season.
But without question. But again, it's one guy on a team that requires four lines of three forwards and three lines of two defensemen, and he's one player. Well, and he is going to be a difference maker for sure. He's that kind of player. He is an impact player. But like you said, don't expect all of a sudden for them to go on a 10-game winning spree because Nate Schmidt comes back.
Yeah,
That's the point.
What I think it will do, though, is it allows Colin Miller to go into a more natural role for him, which is going to help the defense, because Colin Miller, he had 31 points last year. I don't think he has more than two this year. So
they free him up a bit. Now they got to worry about the other side
as
well.
The thing is, bringing Schmidt back gives you the ability to rotate Merrill, Hunt, and England. Keep those guys fresh. I think Hunt needs to be on the ice, because Brad Hunt, I think, has been the best of the three between Merrill, England, and himself. But bringing Schmidt back will give you the ability to kind of have that extra defender when you need one. Holden's not going anywhere. Obviously, McNabb's not going to go anywhere. Shea Theodore and Colin Miller are not going anywhere. So you have that extra spot where you'll now have a three-guy rotation. And look, if there's nights you want to play England, you sit Hunt and Merrill. If there's nights you want to, depending on who you're playing. But what I like about Hunt's game is he brings a little more offense to the game than Merrill and England. And I think, you know, we have to face reality that this team just might not be as good as they were last year. And I know fans may not want to hear that, and they may not understand, well, how could they not be as good? But it's just a fact. They might not be as good. Everything went right for this team last year. There's no guarantee it's going to go right again. Look, I'll be the first to tell you, I picked them to win the Pacific Division. I didn't pick them to win the Stanley Cup, but I picked them to win the division. So clearly, a lot of us were wrong about this team. And look, there's still a long way to go, but the more games they lose, the more distance gets built between them and some of the other teams in the Western Conference as far as a playoff spot.
You know, and the thing is I'm not going to even say that necessarily they're not as good as they were last year. I'll just say that maybe the breaks aren't going their way this year. It's not as magical. Last year was a magical season, and you had that terrible, obviously one of the greatest American tragedies on October 1st, and it just culminated with all of a sudden the hockey team started playing. They fed off of that emotion, and it was magic. And be happy with it. I said it all last year. I don't think it's something we'll ever see again. I still think this will be a playoff team. I really do. But again, having the results they did last year would truly be magical. We are running a little bit behind, Mags. Let's hit fact this, because this is a good one.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. After beating Division II Montana State Billings at the buzzer in an exhibition game last week, the UNLV men's basketball team opened up the regular season last night at the Thomas and Mack with an 11-point loss to Loyola Marymount of the West Coast Conference. This game in particular, the second half of this game, was the worst display of basketball I have seen at UNLV since I moved here in 2004. I'm sure, you know, this won't happen, but this team, from what we have seen in the first two opportunities, is capable of losing every game they play this season. I mean, what the hell was that that we saw last night? It was a debacle. They looked unorganized. They looked out of sorts. They looked like they were uncoached. I mean, I saw a starting point guard dribble a ball off his leg. It was like Ollie in the movie Hoosiers. I saw another guard just literally lose the handle of the ball. No one even touched him. I mean, this was a really, really bad display. I don't even know what to say. I felt bad about maybe how I hammered Marvin Menzies last week a little bit about what it would take to maintain his position as head coach of UNLV basketball after this season. Chris, what I saw last night scared me. I mean, it was really, really ugly.
Well, the good news is it's just one game, and they have 29 others to right the ship, and plus you get the conference tournament as well. UC Riverside on Tuesday night. Look, you and I both saw the game against Montana State Billings, and I took the approach that I wasn't concerned because of the fact that it's an exhibition game. You're not running your set offenses. You're just getting guys in shape and seeing who can do what. What happened last night does concern me. They allowed Jason Bateman's little brother to score 27 points. And I'm kidding. It's not actually Jason Bateman's brother. But the kid Bateman from Loyola Marymount goes for 20.
Justine Bateman's mother or brother, I'd like to meet him.
It could be her daughter, right? She's that old. But
yeah, true.
You know, he had 27 of their 61. What really worried me was they played good for like 20 minutes. They had a 9-point lead in the second half. That evaporated, and they ended up losing by 11 to a team that probably won't win more than 12 or 13 games. That's not good. I mean, like maybe I'm taking too much away from Loyola Marymount. Maybe Marymount will be a little bit better than what I think I would have thought, but they have a big guy, 7'3", from Sweden. He had a decent game, but I want to focus on the positive because Mbakay Jiang had a really good game UNLV. The problem was he's one guy. And when you get 24 turnovers in one game, I don't care. Look, you, me, and a couple of the other guys from this station could go and play a game. If that team has 24 turnovers, we're going to be in the game. You know, that's the thing. They have to take better care of the ball. You're not going to beat anybody. You're going to lose to Air Force and San Jose State if you have 24 turnovers in a game. And it's the first time, I think, since 2004, maybe, that both UNLV's men and women's team started the season 0-1.
Wow. And UNLV women's team, they are expected to compete for the Mountain West title again, Chris. And they got blown out in the first game, which is a really big surprise. Their star, I guess, was limping up and down the court. She's something, a person that a female that definitely should lead this team, be maybe the top player in the Mountain West Conference this year. That hopefully wasn't indicative of what we're going to see from women's basketball. But again, the men's team going forward, they are going to have to turn things around. I don't even know what you do to change the philosophy. I agree with you. Mbakay Jiang played. He proved he was a D1 player yesterday.
Yeah.
He had, you know what? Two of his transition baskets were absolutely the highlight for UNLV.
He had a sequence
but
where
that was
he had a block.
Oh, that's
and the guy
a great
grabbed
block.
grabbed the ball, went back up, and he blocked that. He had two blocks in one possession. So.
But to catch the ball in transition, I think it was from Clyburn, was a tremendous play.
Clyburn had some big baskets, but
a couple of them. But he also mishandled the ball a few times and had a stupid foul late in the game.
He did, yeah.
I mean,
you know, and the thing is, what you do on Tuesday is the exact opposite of what you did last night, because what you did last night did not work.
Yep, I'm not going to disagree with you.
And UC Riverside is a bad enough team where they should be able to beat these guys. Problem is, who knows? I mean, we've seen two games and one an exhibition, but Was there anything that you saw in those two games that make you confident that UNLV is going to just stroll into the Thomas and Mack on Tuesday night and run UC Riverside off the floor? Not for me.
There is nothing that I saw in the first two games, Chris, to tell me they like I said, I don't think there is a team on this schedule, and there's some of them I don't know anything about. But based on the Montana State Billings game and knowing that Montana State Billings had just lost to Grand Canyon by 37 points shortly before that, hey, I'll give Dan Marley all the credit in the world for what he's done at Grand Canyon. But Grand Canyon should not be in the gym UNLV.
It's not even a real university.
Seriously, man. I mean, it's like a club basketball
team. It's like University of Phoenix with a basketball
team. You know, but this is scary, Chris. It really is scary, and there is cause for concern. And I'm telling you right now.
Well, even the guy who I said is the most reliable player, Shakur Justin, even he struggled last night.
He did not look like himself at all last
Noah
night.
Noah Robotham, I think he had moments where he was pressing. And I'll be honest, I know fans they lose sleep over this, and it drives me nuts.
What fans? There was nobody there.
No. I'm talking about. I think the three-point streak will come to an end this year.
Well, maybe.
And fans, that's like the one point of pride. They're like, oh, well, we lost, but hey, at least the streak was extended.
Oh, God almighty. I'll tell you what, Chris, the bottom line is that it also is embarrassing, and we're going to have to talk to Alan Snell in a few minutes.
Well, you'll have to hear this, too. They had 0.7 points per possession last night, which analytically would be the worst in the country if they continue that trend for the season. It might be the worst in the history of college basketball. Look, one game.
I said it was the worst half of basketball I have seen this team play, a UNLV team play, since I have lived here, which has been 2004, and I've attended games every year. That was the second half, the worst half of basketball I have seen this team play. Listen, we got to take a break. We'll talk to Alan Snell in a little bit as well about his book, but I also want to bring up, we were talking about how bad the crowd is. I can't stand how bad UNLV is at supporting their teams. I don't care how lousy these teams are. It is college. And at Michigan State, whether it was hockey, baseball, football, basketball, when they were bad, the fans and the stands were packed. And I just don't get it. I don't get the lack of pride at this university. I understand the teams are bad. I understand bordering embarrassing at times. But come on, people, show up and support the team, at least the students. Student sections should be full at every collegiate game. I believe that. I always had. I always will. Listen, this is out of line. Fox Sports Radio. We've still got Blazing Around the Corner. You'll definitely want to check that out because it involves the other UNLV team. Alan Snell with Sports Biz, of course, Emily Van Busburg, all coming up around the corner.
And off Lexington Thomas, he finds a hole up to the 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. He's at the 35, 30, 25. He's at the 20. He's at the 15. He's at the 10, the 5. Touchdown, Rebels. Lexington Thomas breaks it, and the Rebels take the lead with 3:27 to go.
Which they got, Charles Williams, 100 miles an hour, flies down there in coverage, makes a tackle for no gain. And now the prevent defense starts. One shot is what the Aztecs will have with 6 seconds left. Maybe two if they're quick about it, but no timeouts, no way to stop the clock. Protect the sideline, if anything. This may be the last play of the game.
Prevent defense, only three men up front. Back to throw Agnew. He's being rushed. He fires out up to the 40-yard line to an open man who is tackled at the 38, and the ball comes loose. The ball is loose. It's still loose inside the 20, and it's pounced on by San Diego State, but the game is over. The game is over.
This is why I'm hot. This is why, this is why. Blazing, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 250 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Two happy hours every day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. And, of course, we are there every Monday night hosting the Monday Night Football Party. Tomorrow, New York Giants, San Francisco 49ers, but come on down, man. We'll be giving some stuff away, all kinds of show tickets. Join us again, 215 in North Durango, a Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. Blazing, believe it or not, how about UNLV football team goes to San Diego State, a heavy underdog. We're talking about over a 20 point underdog, and they win 27-24 with a comeback win in the fourth quarter. Wow is all I can say. Lexington Thomas, as you heard, Russ Langer get about as excited as you're ever going to hear Russ get. And Lexington Thomas on that huge run that ended up being the run that sealed the fate of the San Diego State Aztecs and won the game for UNLV. And, wow, it was actually exciting. After the UNLV basketball, I ran over to the cantina across from the Hard Rock Hotel Casino with my good buddy Brian, and we watched the second half of the game, and I just couldn't believe what I saw. It was amazing. And Mags even hung on there and got his under, which looked like it was going to fail, but a holding call, UNLV, and a holding penalty. Probably the greatest holding penalty in Chris Magnum Chapman's life yesterday.
Yeah, because if that late touchdown by Lex Thomas stands,
you lose.
I lose. Donovan Outlaw with the holding penalty.
You could have afforded a field goal, could you?
I would have put. Well, had UNLV kicked the field goal, I would have pushed.
Yeah, 3 points.
But had San Diego State kicked the field goal and tied the game, I would have been toast because of overtime. They would have played until there was a winner. So. Donovan Outlaw, thank you. I'm sure Coach Sanchez wasn't happy with the hold, but he's happy with the win, and I'm happy with the under.
And they're happy with the win, and I got to tell you right now, one thing that was blazing on top of Lexington Thomas, Max Gillum, to give the guy credit, I saw yesterday why he was recruited by Cal and by the Pac-12. The kid can play quarterback. He definitely has an accurate arm, and the assessment yesterday, if you could put Max Gillum's arm on Amari Rodgers, you would have a solid D1 quarterback here at UNLV. But going forward, they've got Hawaii next week, and then, of course, Reno in the season finale, and I think this game really helps them going to Hawaii next week. I don't think they'll look at it as a vacation. I think if there's any way they can win out, which it's a long shot, people, but if they do, they end up with 5 wins, the same win total as last season. And as Caleb Herring said at the end of the broadcast last night, it would be holding par, so to speak. 5 wins totally would justify Sanchez coming back, although he's going to either way. After the Fertitta post, people, don't get your mindset that no matter, even if they lose the next 2 games, Tony Sanchez will be the coach at UNLV next year as far as football goes. That is a lock. Trust me on that. Fertitta speaks and UNLV listens. That's just the way it goes. Listen, joining the show right now on the road. We don't have much time for him, but I love my friend Alan Snell, lvsportsbiz.com. The book is just about here. The press is, it's rolling. It is the long road back to Vegas. I can't wait to get my autographed copy. What's going on, Mr. Snell?
Hey, good morning. Thanks so much for having me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Well, Alan, it was nice. We got a chance to chat last night. Normally at a UNLV basketball, you don't get to chat during the game because it's loud, the fans are there. But, Alan, as your article so succinctly stated that you wrote in lvsportsbiz.com, by the way, people over 100,000 subscribers strong, check it out. It is a great website and a great place to get the business side of sports, especially here in Vegas. But, Alan, an empty stadium last night, man. I mean, and not empty, you know, maybe half the lower bowl was full, but come on, man, this is college basketball. UNLV, a former huge brand, and this has turned into be abysmal, man. The students don't give a crap about basketball or football in this town. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's disappointing. You know, last year, the athletic director and her staff did all they could to try to attract students to Thomas and Mack, free pizzas, free sodas, you know, obviously the swag, and it was disappointing last night to see, you know, a, kind of the usual small rebellion section near the band, and, you know, if you look at the fans, it's an older demographic. It kind of reminds me a little of the Cashman Field 51s crowd a little in terms of the older demo, and you know, it's disappointing. I talked to, you know, several students and several people last night about why do so few students, relatively speaking, attend basketball games. And they found it was a mixture of kind of answers. But check out the story. It was, like you mentioned, the lower bowl, I'd say, was probably about half filled at best. That's, like you said, that's being generous. And it was a really, you know, tough performance. At the end of the day, you know, it was a really tough performance to get a market excited about.
Attendance, to me, was as disappointing as the product that the attendance was there to watch. I mean, it was very disappointing.
It's a season opener, Brian. You know, you expect a little more electricity. They, you know, they UNLV brought in their old pal Chet Buchanan, who, God bless him, he did all he could to try to, you know, pump up the crowd, and you know, they just don't have. There was no buzz or electricity in the building.
Well, and there wasn't, and I mean, it's almost UNLV ought to be happy that a lot of people didn't attend this game and hopefully weren't watching it, because, like I said, it was a very poor display of basketball, uncoached. I thought poorly coached, poorly played, poor anticipation, horrible in-game adjustments, horrible halftime adjustments, as they were worse in the second half. And like I said, it's one game. I'm going to go with Chris there. I don't want to sit here and start dancing all over the funeral of this basketball team, but I don't know how you are going to turn around what we saw last week in the exhibition game against Montana State Billings and what we saw yesterday against Loyola Marymount. I don't know how you turn this around this season, because it doesn't look like they have the personnel to turn this around. This team is worse than last year's team, and that is pretty scary. I don't know if they're worse than the team that Menzies put on the floor 2 years ago when they came in, when he came in disarray, but it is really scary when your starting point guard gets a triple at the end of the game for his only 3 points. And this is a guy that played his college career at Akron, came back to Vegas to play his senior year where he's from, and I was completely unimpressed and have been in the first two games. I've seen a few moments, some decent passes, but for God's sakes, at one point, the guy literally just lost the handle on the ball when no one touched him. That should not happen to a point guard. Alan, real quickly, talk about the book, the signings, Long Road Back to Vegas. I'm excited about it. It's here. It's ready. And in no time at all, you're going to be in Florida with a few book signings.
Yeah, the books are scheduled to arrive at the end of the week. And as you mentioned, it's Long Road Back to Las Vegas. It details my recovery after a distracted motorist smashed into me while I was bicycling in Florida. And I talk a lot about the launch of LVSportsBiz.com, but it's really a story about overcoming trauma, dealing with trauma, coping with trauma, moving ahead, rebuilding your life. So I think there's a universal message in it. Yes, we're going to have a whole series of book signing events here in Las Vegas. I'm finalizing the dates and times, so please stay tuned for that. And like you said, I'm also going to Florida for a family wedding, and I'm going to find time to have book signings on November 30th in Tampa and December 1st in Vero Beach, Florida. And as soon as the book comes out end of the week, Brian, you'll get one of the first copies for sure.
Can't wait. My friend Alan Snell, LVSportsBiz.com. You can follow him at LVSportsBiz. Definitely check out the website again. Over 100,000 subscribers strong. Great stuff, the business side of sports right here in Las Vegas. We appreciate you, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Gentlemen, have a great week, guys.
You do the same. Listen, we're going to take a real quick break. We'll come back with Emily Van Buskirk here on Adeline, Fox Sports Radio, in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studio.
Blessing. It's a blessing. And this process has been a blessing. The coaches have been a blessing. The players have been a blessing. Just everything has been a blessing. And it's just worked in all the right ways, I'd say, for everyone in this organization. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. You know, we got so many guys that are really, really good offensively, that make me look good, you know, and it's not just me, so.
Tua is his name, Alabama quarterback. It's a blessing. Everything's a blessing. His knee's not a blessing, and right now joining us via the telephone, we're going to fly through this segment, but Emily Van Buskirk, Yardbarker college football writer, and of course co-host of Sideline SaaS, the national podcast. Emily, without a quarterback, I mean, it's amazing that Jalen Hurt is also hurt, besides, no pun intended, besides Tua being pretty banged up, although Nick Saban said he could have come back in the game. But does Alabama really need a quarterback to win the national title?
No. Honestly, they could throw Nick Saban out there and things would still be the same. They'll still be the best team in college football, and we'll be handing them the trophy shortly. So they could do anything.
Back-to-back shutouts for the first time since 1980 for this Alabama team. Em, is this the best team that Nick Saban's had there? Defensively, anyway.
Absolutely, and I was not sold until the LSU game, but after that game, it was very hard to imagine seeing a better team, especially shutting out Orgeron. I mean, that was incredible. I don't think we'll see something like that again in a while.
The final four teams right now, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, Michigan. If they win out, then it's a no-brainer. Those four are locked right now, correct?
Yeah, I think that's the way it's going to shake out.
Yep, and, you know, we saw Ohio State. You know what I really liked, and I'll let you go on this one, but it was a lot of fun for me to watch the Michigan State game, even though Ohio State won. The reason for that being is that I saw something I don't see a lot of here in Nevada, defense, and a lot of it. Wow, two of the best defensive teams in the country, and you really saw it in that game yesterday. It is fun when you see really, really stout, good defense, and you saw it in that game, and you really watched Alabama play it again against Mississippi State. Defensive football can be fun when teams are that good defensively, right?
Absolutely, but I got to ask you, what was with that fake punt for the State to take the safety? I mean, that's when the wheels came off.
I have no idea why he had it snapped over. You know, I kind of do. I just think that they were worried that it was going to be a blocked punt for a touchdown because Michigan State, the one thing people don't realize, Michigan State's first two punters are gone. Matter of fact, I think their first three punters. I think it was like their fourth and fifth string punter. They're rotating right now. D'Antonio thought about going out and kicking the ball himself, and I think that was the problem. But listen, she's Emily Van Buskirk. At Emily Nem is her Twitter handle. Check her out there. College writer, football writer for Yard Barker and also Sideline Sass. A great podcast with her and Kaylee Chris. Check that out. And we'll talk to you again soon. We got some more time.
Sounds good.
Appreciate you very much. And real quickly, Mags, we got to quickly transition over to the National Football League. I did want to mention real quick the NBA trade. I don't have time to talk about it, but Jimmy Butler, man, to the Philadelphia 76ers, teaming up with Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. If those guys can stay healthy in Philadelphia, that is a beast in the East that is going to be, to me, a team that can rival Toronto and can rival Boston. I don't think they'll get past the Celtics, but, man, Philadelphia is going to be a really fun team to watch.
Well, I'm a Sixers fan, so obviously I like the trade. Disappointed to see Dario Saric leave because I was a big fan of his. But you know what? Jimmy Butler, one of the best players in the league, you throw him in there with Ben Simmons, and if Markelle Fultz could come around and play like a number one overall pick.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you, man, they have been a team that's been struggling with the long ball. Jimmy Butler brings long ball participation to the Philadelphia 76ers. Like I said, this is going to be a real fun team to watch. Quickly to the NFL, Mags. You won last week. You skimmed by taking the Texans, and they squeezed it past the Broncos for you to boost your record up to 7-2. Caleb Herring, man, surprisingly rode those Saints to a victory, and I said I liked the Rams going down. They did. No more undefeated teams in the National Football League. Caleb, I don't know what his pick is yet, but I'll get it for you for next week. I lost again. I'm a sultry 5-4, but I was there last year when I went on my run, so I'm not too worried. Max, who do you like today or tomorrow?
I'm going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars getting 3 at the Colts. I don't think the Colts are that good. I think Jacksonville's lost 4 straight. They're coming off the bye week, and the big news, Leonard Fournette is active.
That's huge. That is huge for this 3-5 team.
And for Jacksonville, they went to the AFC title game last year. They're playing for their season. If they lose today, fall to 3-6 on the year, kiss the playoffs goodbye.
Colts are playing for their season, too. And
they stink, though. They're not that good.
They're not that good, but Andrew Luck definitely looks – well, I mean, it's the first year we got to see him in a while. You know what, Mags? I'm going to go with the same pick I picked on the show the other night. I think the Rams giving the Seahawks 9.5 points is too many. They're division rivals, and that always is a good game. I think the Seahawks cover the 9.5, although the Rams will get back on the winning road today. I'll let you know Caleb's pick next week. Don't forget tomorrow night, Monday Night Football, Buffalo Wild Wings. Come on down and join me, Montecito Crossing Plaza, 215 in North Durango, as the New York Giants travel to San Francisco to play the 49ers. I'm Brian Feldman. He's Chris Magnum Chapman. Want to thank Alan Snell of LVSportsBiz.com. Emily Van Buskirk for joining the show from Yard Barker, college football writer and Sideline Sass. Hey, we'll be back. We've got Facebook Live. Check us out Friday. We'll be at the Vegas Golden Knights game. And we'll definitely be checking out some more UNLV basketball as the week goes on. Out of line here every Sunday, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I'm Brian. We're back next week, same time, same place. Bye-bye.